and welcome to Gimmick of Genius episode 24. This is a podcast all about Magic the Gathering, bringing you the latest happenings in the MTG community, from news to tournament reports, deck ideas to MTG finance. We are Gimmick of Genius. If you want to learn more about the show, then check us out on Facebook at Gimmick of Genius. Leave a comment or a question and become part of the conversation. My name's Luke and I make YouTube videos. On the line with me is Level 2 Judge Grant. We normally have a third co-host with us, but he can't be with us today as he's busy doing some revision, trying to make his life better or something, I don't know. But Grant, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well.
Recently your birthday, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, middle of the week. Didn't have the day off, I had yesterday off though.
Oh, you had to work?
I didn't have to, but I didn't want to use that because it's like the middle of the week. That was cool. And then last weekend's helped actually run a PPTQ, which was quite fun. We just had it was sealed. We only had 16 people. Then we also had little pods of grass firing off a couple of hours after it started. So it was similar to a little kind of mini GP experience, which I thought was quite a nice little touch.
Cool. Any interesting judge calls?
The observation, which I think has already been commented on in terms of when people have asked about it on the event, the only penalty they had to give out was to judges.
What?
Because we had Mark White, who's a level 2, Mav, who's obviously a level 3, we had Nick and Cameron, who are both level 1s.
Right.
So including myself at this event now, 16 people, well, 17, including myself, we had five judges. And I had to give two warnings to judges and a game loss to a judge that had their deck list a bit wrong by one number. So, that was quite Cameron, who's the one that got the game loss for his deck list being wrong, he made a joke at the beginning saying, this will show that, you know, judges are really rubbish at playing the game. And he was right, and he got the game wrong. that's why you shouldn't joke about it.
Is that the one that is this PPTQ? This is the one that Simon won, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So Simon, our co-host, he won a PPTQ. So I've stolen his thunder now. So he can't tell us when he's going to rejoin the show and finish his revision. Did you do a cut to top 8 draft?
Yep.
Oh, nice. Good.
Yeah. No, it was nice. It was a good experience of doing the draft timed and stuff, which I don't think Simon had done before. So well done, Ben, for getting a good draft while having the Comprel drafting experience.
I think he has done time draft before.
Okay.
Because he made day 2 of GP London when it was Kaladesh.
Oh, yeah, he would have done
that. Yeah, whereas I didn't. So I was moping around. Myself, this week, I've only really been trying to put together a brawl deck using cards in my binder. I haven't got very far with it. I haven't had a chance to play anything this week, but I'm hoping to take to the interwebs with a blue-black mid-range deck.
Okay.
That was shared with me. So it plays things, obviously, like Scarab God, Chupacabras, just efficient removal and card advantage spells, really. I'm going to give that a go, see how I get on with that. I'm not too sure what I'll play instead. The other thing I bought off Simon after hearing, I got really excited listening to a podcast, advertising another podcast now. Patrick Chapin does a podcast called Top Level Podcast, and it was quite funny actually, because I was listening along and I was laughing along to it because he seemed to be kind of gushing about Leech's Mastery, and I wasn't sure, I couldn't actually tell if he was being serious or if he was joking, because he just kept going on about it, and then you'd think he'd finish and then move on to like another segment, and then he'd say, oh, but then you can do this, and then it's like this. So he was like, it's like a really cheap card at the moment. So I thought, you know what? I asked Simon how much it was when I just popped into Dice Saloon yesterday. I just sort of said to him, how much is Leech's Mastery? And he was like 50p. So I was like, I'm just going to buy 4. Probably won't ever need 4, but I'm going to buy them because it's 50p and I'm here.
Over again. That's what I miss. Just going to make
it. Yeah, well, this is what I'm thinking. I mean, it kind of reminds me of that a little bit, and I think it'll be funny. And then I got chatting in the store and I this dude was talking about black white, like you just play like things like Gideon to not lose a single mountain with treasure maps to support a red splash,
yeah,
and then that can give you glorious end if you need it as well. But I mean, like having the Leech's Mastery in play and then casting Approach to the Second Sun seems like it might be quite funny, because you just every time you gain life you draw that many cards, so it's probably a little bit silly, the deck, but I thought for 50p a card, I'm not going to have to invest much into this, so it could be a laugh.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I was kind of already like not playing Standard for a good few months beforehand, even though I had that Vampire deck that was okay. I think I'm just a bit don't know, a bit bored with Stamina really. So unless this set has something fun like Lich's Mastery or something, then I don't think I'm planning on building a Stamina deck anytime soon. But like the only things that grabbed my attention was like the kind of mostly the black stuff, the creature token stuff. So like the one that makes clerics and then you get a demon.
Oh yeah.
Or the Josu making all those knights and then that land that taps for loads of black and, you know, possibly also having Lich's Mastery for that. But I don't know, like the knights look quite fun as well, but then History of Benelli is like really expensive. I'm just thinking like, I don't know, I think I'd at the moment I'm still working on like cubes and stuff, so I'm in no rush to get back into that.
No, I mean, if you're not having fun with it, then there's just no point.
Yeah.
I know it's a bit of a cliche, but you hear people refer to themselves or people refer to like tournament grinders. I mean, they use that word for a reason, because they are, it kind of transcends fun for them. Obviously, they're enjoying it at a macro level, but
yeah,
are they really enjoying, like, for the fifth consecutive weekend, traveling somewhere, going through the motions just to try and scrape a few points together? You know, it's if you're not enjoying something, then you should not bother with it really. Otherwise, what are you getting out of it? Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, like I haven't built a broad deck yet, but since I got a box to do the PBTQ, I've now got those Minotaur people. But I was thinking of making a slime for a broad deck anyway. And so, as I said, with like cubing and sometimes a bit of command group stuff, I am enjoying code stuff more at the moment. So I don't know. I think brawl's quite a good level for me at the moment in terms of I get to use some of the new standard cards, but I don't have to put loads of money into it kind of thing. So
yeah.
I might brawl a go and see how it goes. Oh, talking of cubes as well, I can't mention it last time. You know, I said I finished the Star Wars cube off and stuff, and I had to pay for cube before and all that sort of business.
Yeah.
I can't remember how I came across it. I think it came up on Facebook, actually. I think I did share it as well. But someone's made like their own custom set based around this like cyberpunk kind of stuff.
All right.
It's called Netropolis. I'll link it to you. But it's he's done like a full set of, it's like 270 cards or something. But it's interesting. It's got some really good flavour to it. It uses a lot of like DeviantArt kind of artwork and stuff.
Okay.
And it's got like quite a strong artifact theme, obviously, with like cyborgs and things.
Mm.
But basically, it hasn't really got really multicolored stuff going on. It looks like it'd be quite fun to draft. It's got three like unique mechanics that it's invented. One that doesn't apparently work as well. I think you would have preferred to have redesigned it. But one's called Supremacy, which basically means like there's a card that I think costs, is it three to make 3/1/1 tokens? But if you have more life totals than your opponent, the higher life totals than your opponent, it makes 4 instead, kind of thing.
Okay. That's cool.
It's like a bonus thing. But then the other two I thought were really cool. You've got a mechanic called Arm. So for instance, there's like because you've got obviously lots of weapons and stuff, it's like Cyberpunk. There's one guy, I think he's just one red for like a 0/1, but then when he comes in, you make a equipment that gives it +1/+1 and then equip it onto it, a bit like with germ tokens, but kind of the wrong way around, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And then when he dies, you're left with this equipment that just gives a creature +1/+1, costs 2 to equip it. And the last thing he does is upload, which basically means it's kind of the cross between like drawing a card and like clues in general. So basically, if it's just like upload the top two cards of your library, you exile the top two cards of your library face up, and then you can pay 2 mana at any point to put them into your hand. So it's semi drawing, and then there's stuff that goes off of like if you put things in exile and things. So yeah, it's an interesting one.
I like that. That's an interesting one, actually. The upload one. I like that.
Yeah, but I've printed it off and I'll eventually be turning it into a cube as well. But it's good. This guy's got some really interesting ideas.
No, that's pretty decent.
But yeah, after that I'll have, three custom cubes, some of them made up, and then I'll also have, my two conspiracy cubes and hopefully my unstable cube soon.
That's a lot of cube.
Yeah, it's good. Like, I haven't really, I'm still waiting for a time to sort of do maybe the Star Wars one at Dyson at some point. But I like having this sort of project rather than something like, you know, building a standard deck where you can't, you know, you spend money and maybe not get around to playing it and it's all sort of just messed up. With this, you know, once I've built it, I've got it forever kind of thing. So I quite like this little project.
Definitely. And it's got more longevity than standard as well, because...
Exactly.
You know, it's not the sort of thing you do too regularly, and you wouldn't want to, I don't think, something like Star Wars Cube, because, you know, it's, if you did it every week, you'd be like, okay, solved it now.
Yeah.
It's nice to have something like that.
Mono Ewoks, obviously.
Mono.
The Star Wars Cube is, like, you have to go 2 or 3 colours at least. It's just, it's very shard-focused. So monocolour in Star Wars would be very, very bad.
Okay.
Well, you go 5 colour troopers, because they're like slivers. It's very...
That's cool. That's... I like that. Kind of makes sense in a way.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things I thought we should have a look at was this event in Atlanta, Star City Games event. That's quite big because their Star City games are pretty much like a GP. The closest thing to a GP, if you don't want to attend a GP. they're pretty big, and they had a team event, but it wasn't unified constructed. So the standard elements, that the standard third was basically just like regular standard decks, no odd restrictions in them. And that was 28th of April, so only more or less a week ago now, last week. The top eight was won by Blue White Control, but then we also had quite a mixture of other decks in the top eight. So you had a second Blue White Control deck, you had two mono red aggro decks, three red black vehicles or aggro, and then Soul Tie Constrictor. So what's that? Four different deck types there, I think, unless I've miscounted. Yeah, four. I mean, if you separate red black aggro and red black vehicles, you could maybe argue a different. But the red black aggro is similar to something I was running a little while ago. So basically, it runs four Bomb Rat Courier, Scrap Heap Scroungers, Ballista, Inventor's Apprentice. And then the other differences might be numbers of Earthshaker Kenras, P and Lars, Heart of Kieran's, Magma Sprays, Abrades, Aethersphere Harvester. But the key similarity is the Black Splash for Unlicensed Disintegration and Scrap Heap Scrounger, which are really, really good.
On the second deck, there's a mono-red gift deck that plays seventh, which looks like, I was kind of a bit bored of the kind of aggro decks and control decks, it's not the kind of thing I play. But go on the second deck and mono-red gift. Look at this list, it's fantastic.
Okay, so this is the classic.
Yes,
it is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So you've got
play sets of Bombat Couriers and Walking Ballistas. And then you've got like Combat Celebrants.
Oh, yes.
The Goblin Pirate, you've got the triple red Chain Whirler. And it's just literally all just red. You've got a Skirt Prospector and stuff. And you've got, four gates and two gifts. And the thing is, I do miss playing Godfarer's Gift. And this is quite good. This looks quite silly. This is what I mean to get back in stand. It's the kind of thing I need because I don't want to play Control. I don't want to play aggro, like mid range stuff that's really expensive. This looks. I don't think there's anything here that's very expensive, is there?
No, I know Rowdy Crew isn't, so maybe Goblin Chainwalker might be a few quid.
Yeah.
Because that I believe, will be, if I flip to the mono-red decks, I'm fairly certain it's there. Because mono-red aggro is a deck. Yeah, Chainwalker's in there. So that's going to be giving me a little price tag. Couldn't tell you what. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The rest of the deck, pretty...
Yeah.
If you've got the Ballistas, I think the Ballistas are going to be the most expensive part of that.
I've got a place out of those.
Yeah. Oh, and Chandra's, but it's only two.
But then, like, it's just nice having a deck that's, crazy mountains or crazy sort of lands that's just got mountains instead, or, Scarab Gods or whatever, which I don't have.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting take on Godfarer's Gift.
Yeah.
Really interesting. How easy would it be to splash blue? Actually, hold on, think about that. What we're talking about. On the first day, so rewinding back to the day one event, I believe... There was a blue-red Godfarer's Gift deck. So 14th place main event, we had Samuel Tuil, who...
Oh, this looks a bit cheaper, actually.
Yeah, so...
Maybe this one.
Because I just felt like it seemed a shame to lose, the blue card. So, like, Minister of Inquiries and Champion of Wits.
Yeah.
Because in Godfarer's Gift, those two cards seem really, really good for what you're trying to do. I quite like this because I remember the blue-white one. I think it was Pascal Maynard played it at a Pro Tour.
Yeah.
The blue-white gift where it used a lot of instants and sorceries to basically just kind of turbo out a Godfarer's Gift. I mean, that deck still exists. Like, there's nothing that stops you from being able to play that deck.
Yeah.
But I quite like that this is just all creature-based.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like that. Rowdy Crew is only like... $1, if that.
Yes, because it's not very cheap.
Well, it's like four, so it's not too bad. The Combat Celebrant is an interesting choice. I do like that as an idea.
Combat Celebrant's great, because you can do... It really plays well with Godfarer's Gift.
Yeah, it's just like, two tokens and two combat things.
Yes.
That's $7, so that's one of the most expensive ones. Right?
Yeah.
It went from 2 to 12 shortly after the start of April, and then it's settled down to about 7. About 8 or 9 at the moment.
Yeah, it is really nice. I think this is where it's got a home, because I've seen it be used or talked about in gift deck before, and it just makes so much sense. For anyone who's not familiar with it, as you sort of mentioned briefly there, you can exert it when it attacks, and if you do, you untap all your creatures and you get an additional combat phase, and God Pharaoh's Gift triggers at the beginning of combat on your turn. You get to return your creature from your graveyard. So that's why he's really, really at home here, because he enables you to do that twice. I suppose one of the only weaknesses with this deck is not having the refurbish, access to refurbish, which is pretty strong. But then...
Yeah, but then you're not basically milling yourself as much at all.
No, but that's again why I quite like having the blue in it, in this blue-white version, because at least you've got the gate to the afterlife.
Yeah, I think what I like about this one is, and the reason why I stopped playing God Pharaoh's Gift was, you know, if they just have, like, any kind of graveyard exile is rubbish, because then, say, if your plan is just turbo out Gift because you're going to get it into your graveyard, then refurbish it, and they just exile it with Covenant Nation or whatever, like, your whole plan's gone. Yeah. Or this one, fair enough, if they exile like a lot of your graveyard, that's bad, but because you're kicking out creatures so quickly, I don't think they'll be able to kill you that way, because you'll get the Gift with gate, you know, through normal means, and then you'll just have a bunch of creatures in your graveyard, and they won't be able to get rid of all of them. So I think this one seems a bit more robust compared to the other one.
Yeah, I mean, it's got eight one drops with Bowmat and Minister, so turn one, one exactly. Lane.
Ballista. And lots of them kill themselves at any point, so that's quite useful.
Yeah, yeah. Warkite Marauder's interesting.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'm copying this list now because it's quite interesting.
Sorry, not 8-1 drops, 12 one drops with Fanatical Firebrand.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant. Like, you just can buy yourself up, which is quite cool as well. There's obviously scope prospects.
Sorry, I was thinking it was something else for some reason. And yeah, and the Rivulet as well. If you need Rivulet, it can mill.
True.
Which is nice. So it's got a little bit there. Not much to say about the sideboard. Silent Gravestone is pretty interesting. I don't know what. Cards in graveyards can't be the target spells or abilities.
So other Gift decks, I suppose.
It turns that one off, though, doesn't it?
Does it?
Yeah, it can't be the target. It's God Pharaoh's Gift target. Oh, no.
Yeah, sorry. It does.
You may exile a creature card from your graveyard.
Oh, it's for a target.
No.
Wow, yeah. Okay, sure.
Well, I suppose if it wants to pay 4 mana and tap and exile, and it gets to draw a card and it's exiled stuff. Because actually, like you say, it doesn't really mill that much.
No, it's the other way around, isn't it? It actually stops Crook of Condemnation. How weird is that?
Oh, because Crook's exile a card.
Yeah, that's really bizarre, isn't it? It actually does the opposite.
Because Relic doesn't target, but the Relic of Progenesis I'm thinking of, but the Crook does it?
Does, yeah, exactly. Oh, so you can exile everything, but you won't be able to single target stuff, so that pushes them to exile everything, and then obviously you've got they haven't got a Crook anymore. That's interesting.
How funny. See that. No, well, that is quite funny, actually. okay, cool. So, yeah, Soultide Constrictor is the rest of the top eight. Soultide Constrictor, there's nothing really new there. The counters, +1/+1 counters, Rickshaw, Servant, Winding Constrictor, all that good stuff.
He's in the Mono Black Control list, 25th place on the first day.
Mono Black Control, what's that? What's that?
Mono Black Control, yeah. See, this is the kind of deck I did want to build just because of Cable Stronghold and Josu. Oh, it's got Cable Stronghold and Torrent of Hailfire. That's fantastic.
I wanted to try something like this when I heard about the Stronghold, because that just seems like a match made in heaven. Like,
yeah, I agree.
And the other thing as well is, are they playing the Lotus? No.
Nah.
I suppose they're not going. They're probably being a little bit sensible. But I mean, I was going like I was thinking. Well, if you're playing loads of swamps and you've got the Stronghold, you could just go full on and then play that 5-mana Lotus.
Yeah, sure.
For 3. So you can just tap that for 3.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Because obviously you've got to invest mana initially, but then once you're there, you're turning your mana into a... So you're not having to spend 3 mana effectively. You just go, right, I'll tap my Lotus and then tap that. But I don't know, maybe it's not good.
It seems because you can have any colour you want. I think it's a bit of a waste of the fact that you can have any colour you want.
Yeah, true. See, I just liked it because it was May 3.
Yeah.
This seems really strong, just like all the nasty black removal.
Just like Divest, Doomfall, Duress, Common Demise, Torrent, Push.
Kill Rest everything.
Cast out, yeah.
The thing is, if you're... It kind of works quite nicely, the Torrent of Hellfire, because if you're just... basically shooting everything in the face. And yeah, then they don't have many permanents left, so then you just go, blah.
Yeah. I don't think there's not much too expensive in this thing. So, again, you've got the Walking Blizzard Survival, you've got those. But from the new set, it doesn't really use... Because, I mean, cable strongholds are only like $2. So.
No. What's quite nice is, unless we have a situation like we did in Theros Standard, where the mono strategy does really well consistently, cards like, where is it, Dreadshade,
yeah,
are probably going to be quite restricted in how high they can climb.
Yeah, that's true. Although I feel like if we're going to return to another set again, I think it might be Theros next.
You reckon? That doesn't feel that long ago.
It doesn't feel that long ago, but if you think about all the other options, let me get rid of this stuff. So obviously we can't go Ravnica because we've already been there again.
Go Phyrexia,
so like Mildew we can't do.
Just go Lorwyn, that'd be great.
Lorwyn would be good. Lorwyn was the other viable option. We can't do Zendikar. Obviously can't do Kalanduros, Ixalan, whatever the standard. Kamigawa was another option. But basically, if you look at the list of sets since the beginning,
yeah,
the only ones it can really go back to is either Kamigawa, Lorwyn, or Theros. Because all the other ones have been to at least twice. So if they've got these triple cards, them having Devotion would be interesting. Maybe not next, but maybe like when these cards are like at the end of standard kind of thing.
Yeah, so you get that little bit of crossover.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they'll do. But Theros, I reckon definitely within the next 2 years, we'll go back to Theros.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, which I look forward to, because Theros was the first set I played completely when I got into competitive Magic. So I did casual, my 8th edition. And I started playing just as Gatecrash came out. So I had like a bit of, you know, Innistrad and all that nonsense and stuff. I couldn't afford like Hammer's for Fails. Then it was like Gatecrash and stuff. And then Theros was my first like complete block. And I really like Greek themed stuff anyway. And Devotion is a really cool mechanic. And so was the Enchantment. So I'm looking forward to going back there because that was really fun.
I quite like Theros. I know a lot of people. It was funny. I sort of got back into Magic after a little break just around Theros. And a lot of people got quite tired with the Devotion stuff quite quickly.
Yeah.
I didn't really mind it so much. Maybe I was just happy to be playing Magic again, so it didn't really bother me.
I was a big fan of it, really. There was some, like, I think the only very sort of accurate complaint was that they kind of messed up the block structure, but then this was like when they were first experimenting with doing different things, because generally speaking, the third set in a block has always been disappointing. They did it the opposite way around this time, where Born of the Gods was really disappointing. Journey into Nyx was really fantastic.
Yeah.
That's when they decided, look, we can't really do three sets in a block and it'd still be good. Like, it's going to have to be one way or the other. So then at that point, they decided they had to go with two and then Shelby. So, it was disappointing for that, but I think it was some good experimenting. And overall, I think it was a really good set experience, I think.
I think so. I'm going to play Magic regardless of how they do it. But
yeah.
I don't think you, on balance, I think if you think of it like, yeah, I don't think you get as much out of a third block overall. I mean, if you're really into the block, and it's great, and it's fine. But I think having the set come out and then another bit of it seems good. And then anything more, I think people's interest naturally begins to wane. Rightly or wrongly, I just think from their point of view, at least, it seems to make sense. Because, like, you know, why would they kind of flog a dead horse, have to limit their set design and stretch things out in an odd way if they could just go, right, well, I'll just put this here and then we'll make a second one and then people have got their excitement and then it's kind of on to the next thing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting doing this kind of single block but then optional however many you want kind of structure. That's going to be cool. Three sets and a core set, but they don't have to be related.
But
I think they did say that if they wanted to spend a bit more time on the plane, like say Dominaria has got quite a lot of story, if they wanted to stay there for a bit longer, there's nothing saying that the next one has to be a different place. They'll just do blocks or whatever they want and spend as long or as little on the plane as they want to.
Yeah.
So that's quite a cool idea.
It might feel weird because you might feel like you've got more blocks in a format, but actually you haven't.
Yeah. But it's good because you get a better variety of mechanics and stuff going on, so that's quite cool.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so are there any other decks that stuck out to you on this day one?
Just having a look now.
The only thing I'll say about the blue-white control deck that won it...
It's super boring.
Is I know you'd hate it, like, so much, but surprise, Teferi is in a blue-white control deck. I mean, who would have thought? And Singular Way feels like a mistake already. I think printing the... Was it the two-mana one in... not Ixalan. What's the second block of Ixalan called? Why is it on my
blank? Right.
Rivals, yes. So printing that Unwitting End, is it? Two mana one?
I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, the one with the dinosaur, it looks confused on it.
Suspicious End?
Yeah, something like that. That's two mana. That's basically a two mana thing. which gets rid of a creature. I mean, blue white had that slot, and if it wanted something with flash, it had the 2-mana enchantment, which malfunction, the blue one, the flash one.
Oh, yeah. Aether Meltdown.
So it had that if it wanted a flash answer, but it was, none of them were really perfect. You might have to think about what you want to play and how, you know, in that slot. But also you had the, well, if I want cheap removal, I could just play black for Fatal Push, so maybe I go Esper. Whereas Seal Away, I think, just goes, oh, no, I'll just play Seal Away now. And that's virtually all problems that aren't part of Kieran solved. And I just think that might have been a bit too much for this archetype. I don't think it's going to be like, oh, no, blue-white's going to be broken. But I just think if you were going to give him that tool, then that's a bit much. Because now they have that, cast out, and all the other good blue-white stuff, you know, counter spells. He's even playing Blink of an Eye, just the return.
Yeah, this is a good card. It's weird that they didn't just reprint into the Royal, because it's literally the same card.
Yeah.
It's weird they didn't just reuse that. It's, you know, it's fine when they sort of, you know, redo like a bounce or a counter spell if it's got like the set mechanic in it, like, you know, scry or you know, draw a card or make a treasure or whatever, that's fine. But it's literally the same card.
Yeah, that seems strange. Maybe there's no Royals in Dominaria.
Yeah, I did think that, and you know, sometimes you do get a flavor fails out and they couldn't reprint it, but I think they probably could do. Like, yeah. There's a lot of sea and you know, storms and stuff. I'm sure they could do fine. Just change the artwork, it's fine.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, that, when you say, oh, it's boring, playing against this is probably quite painful, because especially when they get to 4 mana, between cast out, counter spells, seal away, and settle the wreckage, you're going to be staring across and they're thinking, I really don't know. Have I got a good play here? Because, you know, they could have any of these flash answers, and that is just ugh.
I don't like control generally and ever. But I'm looking at the Bant approach list that was in the classic that put 8th place, and I kind of just like that a bit better, because it's got like the green part of it. So it's got like Hour of Promise, it's got Spring, it's got Carnage Tyrant and Sideboard kind of thing. Yep. And I kind of want to play it just because I like those sort of colours, and I like that you can win Approach the Second Sun, and I feel like it's slightly less boring, but I still think it's very boring. So I don't like the fact that I'm drawn to this deck, because it's basically the same thing. It's just not hardcore blue-white counterspell control. It's more just like board stall control.
Yeah. I think what's probably appealing to you is the sort of gimmick of, hey, I'm not playing any creatures.
Exactly. Like that deck that you flagged up about, the Azor's Gateway one. And I love the idea of winning using that and trying to Hellfire, but unfortunately to make that deck work, you have to be like super control-y, so yeah. Unfortunately I can't play that, even though the gimmick is super good.
that's understandable. That's why I wasn't sure about that deck when I first played it, because I honestly, for about 5-6 turns, thought I was playing it some blue-black control, and then weird stuff started happening. But yeah, no, that's fair enough. Because it did play pretty much like blue-black control, except when it was doing its thing. And the other one that, I'm not sure if you're going to like this one or not. This is the one that I was a bit like, maybe you'll just look at it and go, nope, don't like it. But the on day one event, the team event,
yeah,
22nd, blue-white historic.
I did have a look at this. It's like I was drawn to it because a lot of the pre-release and the draft that I've done since Dominaris came out, I did end up going quite a few like blue-white or just generally historic focus. I looked at this, it's interesting, but I don't know. The idea of playing it, because you've got to have like the Gear Hulks and the Lyras and Teferi and stuff, it's going to, oh, and 4 History of Benelli, it's like,
yeah.
If you've got all these cards, then sure, but if not, this looks like a very, very expensive deck.
So let's talk about History of Benelli first. So this is one of the Saga ones, isn't it? So it's 3 mana, as the Saga enters the battle, enters, and after your draw step, add a lore counter, sacrifice after 3. So at 1, you get a white creature token with vigilance, and 2, you get a white creature token with vigilance. It's a 2/2.
Yeah.
And then it's 3 knights.
Yeah. Super fun.
Right, okay. So how many knights does it have?
Any other knights? None, apart from the ones it makes using that.
Okay.
But I suppose because you're controlling it, I guess it makes sense or something, but...
So
also with Wrath Capuchin, you can flash in History of Benelia as well. So you can make 2/2s at the end of your opponent's end step or during your opponent's combat, and then you'll get another one at the start of your turn.
Okay.
Because historic spells have flash and sagas are historic, so
no, that's fine. So this is what I'm trying to piece together in my brain, because I'm thinking, why is it even playing this? So got tricks there. So that's interesting. Instant speed tokens, at least 3 mana for 6 power tokens over some amount of time, depending on how you're flashing it in. Okay.
But given the history of Blenheim, it's a $20 card. Even if I did like this deck, I'm certain not playing this in standard.
Why is that $20? Oh, it's a mythic, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's generally believed to be one of the better sides.
Fine. One thing I do like is the Wizard's Retort, a counterspell costing almost a counterspell.
You can flash in Wrath as well. You can say if you've got 6 mana open, and go, you've got no counterspells or whatever, you can flash in Wrath and then you've got a Wizard and you can counter it. That's quite fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems quite cool.
I don't like that it has Lyra, which powers up angels, but you've only got one other angel. Like, it's very apparent that Lyra and Dawnbringer, they're playing just because it's a very good card. Well, thematically, I kind of like playing cards that make use of what they're supposed to be used for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from. I just think it speaks volumes for the power of it, doesn't it? When you're seeing it play for exactly the reasons you've said. When the floor of this is Baneslayer Angel.
Exactly, yeah.
It's almost like it doesn't have any other text.
Cool. Lyra's interesting. I knew she was at 20, and then she spiked to 35, and now she's settled down to about 32 at the moment.
Wow.
So, yeah, this standard deck would be at least $300. This is crazy.
That's extreme. That is extreme.
Oh, actually, no, more than that with Walking List. Yeah, so this looks fun, but I'm certainly not playing it.
The land base is cheap.
That's fine. Yeah.
That's not, you know, it's got 16 basic lands. Like, that's something.
Yeah.
So, look, you got to start on the positives. If you look at it like that, that's 16. You got 16 cards out of 60 already, for free, almost.
I like that. I mean, it depends on what the decks look like. And at the moment, it looks more like people are just going for what mythics or rares have the most value, like history and Lyra and stuff. Yeah. But I like generally that Dominaria has a lot of creatures. I mean, mostly for Brawl, I suppose, rather than standard. But I like that it has a lot of legendary creatures that are uncommons and therefore will always be cheap. So if you want to do a Wrath Caption deck or a Slimefoot deck or a whatever, you know, legendary wizard deck, put the idea. If you pick the uncommon ones, it's always going to be cheap, which is quite nice.
No, yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think when we were talking about the spoilers, we were both in agreement about that. Like, it's just so, like, especially for like the younger or newer players who are like, oh, I want to get in on that, and they can. And it's just like, they don't have to spend, you know, Lyra Dawnbringer money on that one legend they want. They could just do that, which is really nice. No, it's that's pretty good. I quite like the Trickster as well in this deck. That adds an... I feel like this deck's going to have an infuriating amount of tempo plays.
Yeah.
I mean, Merfolk Trickster, giving your stuff flash, being cheeky with History of Benalia when you're flashing it in, Seal Away, Blink of an Eye, Commit to Memory.
Yeah, it's going to be... It's a good deck. It's good, but just... not for that money.
No. And with a couple of Settle the Wreckage as well, it's going to have that other infuriating facet of, I'll just attack with everything to really just kind of go around what this guy's doing, and they just go settle, and you have no board, and like, oh god. You can just imagine like board stalls just being horrendously awkward.
Yeah, I think, again, if I do want to get back in standard, this set looks a lot slower. Like, there's so much more control than I think there was before, mostly because of Teferi, to be honest. So I think if I do want to play standard, I think I'm going to have to go with something that's very, very different and that can deal with control. Like, I think, to be fair, that red gift deck or the red-blue deck gift deck, I think should be okay because it's quite a different style to the kind of mid-range stuff that's going to be facing and that sort of energy and things. Yep. But I still think you need something a bit more angle-shooty to get a good advantage over control, I feel, but I don't know what that would be.
No, I know what you mean. It's fine. It is tough to find something that both doesn't just roll over and die to mono red, yet also doesn't just sit there and have everything countered or destroyed.
I mean, like the mono black control one, like that sort of somewhere in the middle, because it's got like hand disruption, like divest and duress, which is good against control, but then it's also got like gifts and etherborns and dread shade, which is good for blocking early creatures for red. Yes. So mono black control is not fine. They're not bad. And then like the mono red gift one, I don't know. I mean, maybe the blue red one, because it's got potential tricks that can deal with counter spells and things, but I don't know.
I agree with you about the mono black. Any deck that's playing Vraska's Contempt at the moment seems like they're going to be in a good spot. Being able to deal with things like Hazoret and, well, any creature from a Bowmak Courier to a Torrential Gearhulk.
Yeah.
That's really nice. Because Vraska's Contempt is the card cast out wants to be in many ways. Yeah. Obviously, I'm not saying that it's better than cast out, but like the fact that, you know, there's no drawback. Once it's gone, it's gone. You know, it's the perfect answer. If you're thinking of colours to play and you want flexibility, then Vraska's Contempt is a good place to start.
And yeah, I'm glad I've got two, but because this one has four and they're $15 each, I'm like, oh.
Oh, they've got $15 now?
Yeah, well, 14, yeah.
Grant, you've got to buy Rare Removal early.
I know. Well, the thing is, I think I opened one. I traded one when it was $5. So I'm happy with that. Because most decks weren't running two, more than two, I mean. But this one does four, so yeah. Mm.
It won't be that way forever. It's like Dreadball when that was in Standard. Like, get it when it's cheap.
Yeah, true.
Fun fact, can't see a single teamer list anywhere.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, there's not really much that benefits that sort of colour combo in the new set, is there?
No. Also, say what you like about Wizards in the last year and a half, 2 years, banning and clumsy, you know, games design, etc. All the old arguments that we've seen before. But not a single teamer deck, and mono red is still very prevalent. So imagine what it would have been like if they hadn't banned Ramunite Ruins and the Ferocidon.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, I wasn't happy with either of those two bans because I enjoyed that deck and I thought it was a bit heavy-handed, and people were like, oh, it's only 1 or 2 days worth of meta or whatever data and preemptive bans. But actually, mono red's still a deck, and it's still, I mean, what was it, 3 decks in that top 8 on that first day?
Yeah.
Granted, there is a bit of a caveat to that, which is mono red is a safe bet week 1 of Standard. So it does remain to be seen how the format will turn out after that. But it's safe to say, at least at this stage, it's a bit of a contender. I mean, in the top 16 in the Classic, you had 5 decks mono red. And if you add in the red black aggro as a sort of red aggressive deck archetype, then that's 8 decks. So that's half of the decks playing like a red aggressive strategy. Now, I don't know
on the red though, doesn't it? Because like the mono red was what, 6th, 9th, 11th, 15th, and if you look at red black aggro, you got 2nd and 4th. So red black definitely seems to be doing significantly better than just mono red.
Yeah, I think, and this is again the reason why I was drawn to it in the first place is Unlicensed Disintegration does a lot of work. And when you're sitting there and you're playing and you're going, oh, they've played a 4-toughness creature and I now lose.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, why aren't you playing Unlicensed Disintegration? Like, you can't, arguably, you know, you're going to struggle against opposing Hazarets, but you play around that. That's like, you know, you can chump block one thing. It's a legend. You know, they can't play two of them. But, Unlicensed Disintegration just gives you that reach and ability to not just lose to a Gearhulk on the spot. Arguably, you got Braids for Gearhulk as well, but whatever. Mono red aggro, lightning strikes and shocks, that's about it. You look at lightning strike, you look at unlicensed integration, you go, right, for 1 extra mana, you've got an unconditional removal spell that also does a lightning strike.
Yeah, exactly.
It does, it's like 2 lightning strikes, but for one less mana.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Pretty good card.
So yeah, but the mono red one's good. I mean, it's pretty obvious a lot of the card choices, like all the Kenrias and stuff, and the Chain Whirler. It's quite cool seeing the Goblin Chain Whirler. I wasn't sure if that would actually see play. But
yeah,
I imagine the mono red mirror is hilarious when people are playing their one drops or whatever, and then someone plays a chain whirler, and then they play their one drops, and then someone plays a chain whirler. It's just like,
yeah,
okay.
I always was interested by the triple color of each one. Like I was always interested to see which one would do better out of the five. And I do still like the Tempest Djinn because I like the idea of doing like just some, I don't know, weird mono blue deck where you've got Tempest Djinns and the Genie as well, but I don't know what the rest of the deck would be, but I just like the idea of having just big toughness 4 flying creatures or high toughness flying creatures, I think.
Well, maybe do look at that, but with mono blue. Godfarer's Gift. Do that with Godfarer's Gift.
Oh, I see, yeah. So the only problem is it makes it slightly... oh no, I suppose it makes it better, yeah. Because Tempest Djinn would... Yeah, that'd be really good, because it'd be a base 4-4, but then get bigger, wouldn't it? And then Zahid would lose... Well, he would just be a 4-4 flyer, but it's good because you could play the gate, which gives you an artifact, and you tap gate to get the Zahid. Yeah, that works.
And the thing is, you've got all the blue cards that are already there that go into the God Fairy's Gift deck. So then you just add the one drop, the Millie guy. What's he? And then you've got
Minister of
Inquiries.
Inquiries, yeah.
Yeah, that guy, okay. Champion of Wits.
I might have to do some brewing later.
Yeah,
because I'm pretty sure Zahid and Tempest Gin are worth nothing. Because even if Zahid was going to be worth something, he's been printed so many times in this promo, he's going to be worth that.
The other fun thing as well is it gives you access, playing mono blue, River's Rebuke might be quite interesting. So against these decks that are doing silly things like mid range or just like swarming up the board.
What's River's Rebuke?
One sided bounce everything they have.
Wow. Oh, yes, I know. The partnership one.
Yeah.
That's going to run. There's some fun stuff here, I think.
I think River's Rebuke's great in like God Pharaoh's Gift Mirrors when the board stalls out and you're just waiting for something to happen.
I also saw Time of Ice and Antiquity's War do some interesting stuff with the ETK.
Time of Ice, what's that one?
Simon single-handedly won with it in, I think, his final game or second to last game. So it's a 4-mana saga, super tap creature, then you super tap creature, and then the third one is Returnal tap creature to their owner's hand.
That's horrible.
And it was great because Simon had, like, I think, about two or three creatures. The opponent was just playing creatures like top decking kind of things, like tap it down, bounce, and they just had nothing to block with. And it was just, yeah. Super good value. I think he got it back with something, I can't remember, but yeah, it was just super good. And Antiquity's War, I was running in when I drafted like blue white like stuff, like historic stuff, and Antiquity's War was fun because I was using it to like find my ice manipulators faster or like find my equipments faster, but then they all turn into 5/5s and turn 3 and attack with them kind of thing. That was quite fun.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, so there are things.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm gonna give this a look. This looks fun.
Yeah, do it. I expect full report by next show.
Because you can even run stuff like Merfolk Trickster, even. It's good.
Have a look at. When I look at doing God Pharaoh's Gift decks, the best thing to do is do a gather research with Enters the Battlefield.
Yes, yeah, same as. Yeah, I did that as well. I had some really crazy stuff to add to my one, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. I'll do that later. After the podcast, let's make some mono blue God Pharaoh's Gift using mostly genies or. Gins.
That'd be awesome. You could even splash if you wanted to. You probably don't want to, but you could splash black God for Scarab God.
Yeah, that I would do if I had it. But,
nah, no, fair
enough. Has price changed at all?
I think you should check that out because that's the other thing I was going to say is there is a definite absence of the Scarab God. I mean, I don't know if he's gone completely. I imagine like the Sultai decks, Sultai mid range.
Okay, so just after, Alan Kett came out, Air of Devastation came out, and he was 15. And he went up to about 30, then Ixalan came out, and went up to 48, then went down to about 30 as a Rivals release, and now he's just sitting at about 20, 26, 27 at the moment. Mm-hmm. So not at a price that I want to buy some, but he's still a lot cheaper than he was before.
Yeah, which is good. That's quite a lot for the Scarab God. Especially when, like, most of the time he's only, like, a 2-off.
I know, exactly, yeah. Interesting.
But, yeah, no, it looks like pretty much only showing up in, like, the Sultai kind of decks on day one.
Yeah.
In the Classic, I don't think he's there in any other kind of thing, which, I mean, it makes sense. If you look at a lot of the decks, they're, like, green-black, blue-white, mono-red, red-black. They're just not colour combinations that support him, so it makes sense. And if we're not seeing the teamer play everything decks anymore, then he's also not going to be up there as much as he.
No.
I've always found it a bit strange that there aren't more blue-black or Esper gifts deck. Like, why isn't that deck doing better? That just seems like with him, it's just more of the same stuff.
Like, I used to run Esper Godfather's Gift. Like I said, the issue was we didn't have like targeted graveyard removal, so you would be able to refurbish it. And just generally, it wasn't just as, like, you had some really cool stuff you could do. Like, I used to run, like, Mona, Butcher of whatever she's called. Uh-huh. So you'd have, like, a hasty creature that could then kill stuff. That was really cool. But you weren't getting, like, the speed out of it. It was cool that you had all these little tricks, but at the time, they could just remove your best stuff and it wasn't as good.
Okay.
But maybe if the format does slow down, then having something like that where you've got kind of like a semi sort of toolbox kind of deck would be interesting, because Mona was quite fun in certain situations.
Yeah, and I
used to run the I can't remember what it's called, 2-mana 1/2 that explores anyway, and that was just quite good because Yep. When she came back as a thing, she could be a 5/5, and if not, you can put stuff in the bin. That was quite good. So yeah, that three color mixture was always quite nice. Seeker Squire,
yes. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. I remember when I first saw it, I was like, why is that even, what is that doing? But yeah, it is. Can't judge a creature by its power and toughness alone.
I'm just doing like a price breakdown of Dominaria, and yeah, certain stuff's gone up super much. Like Khan is now $43, to Ferry's like $35. Lyra's, like we said, $32. Short of expecting. Mox Amber still seems to be at $24. What format is it actually being played in?
I don't know.
Because I always knew, like, I don't keep track of Legacy and Vintage at all, but like, I imagine someone's gone mental over that for some reason.
The hype will stop, and eventually people will realise it's a bad card. Like, I'm sorry, it's just not good. Again, on this podcast I was listening to,
yeah,
like they were saying, it was very kind of like flippant, kind of like, how can we break Mox Amber? And it's like, I'm sitting there thinking, you can't. You've got to build a shit deck around it. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, I got my Mox Amber on turn one, and then turn two I play a legendary. And
I like that in Dominaria, it seems like there's a lot of mythics that are worth money. There's not, you know, sometimes, you know, you get like top two or three and the rest is worth garbage. Like the top 10 cards are all mythics. The top five are worth 20 or more. So the bottom of that is History of Penelia. But then the sixth one down is Muldrotha, you know, that one that's like ridiculous for Commander and Brawl.
Oh, yeah.
So I like that when you go past History of Penelia, so all the top five cards are either colourless, white or blue. And then all the other expensive ones are all just stuff like Commander and things, or Brawl.
Well, they're expensive, or just the next
card.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So again, the top five are over 20, and then it goes down to 8. The top of that 8 is Muldrotha, and you've got like, stuff like the other Chandra, the other Teferi, Jaya, some other legendary stuff that's good for Brawl, yeah.
I'm both surprised and not surprised by that, because they definitely made this set with those formats in mind. So
yeah,
it's not like people have had to kind of scrape around for a new Commander or whatever. They've gone, right, here are cards we've kind of pushed with these formats in mind. Like, we support these formats now. We make cards that we can kind of squeeze into these formats. When you've got good ones, like the words you said there, I'm not surprised, because it stands to reason that's going to have a trickle down effect with the vendors, collectors and sellers of cards, who are then going to pick up on that and then be like, right, I don't need to now put this in my bulk bin for the two Commander players I might get in. They're like, oh, I regularly hear Simon saying like he's very aware of the different types of players he's got. And he's like, oh, that's a good one for Commander. So he knows he can price that accordingly. Like, it's just how it works.
And Rat Colony is the most expensive common at 76 cents. Let's see, they got to like 5. What is Relentless Rats at the moment? That's got to be still several dollars. Relentless Rats is $2.40.
It doesn't sound like much. And then you realise what you need to do.
It just steadily creeps up like over the last 5 years. Oh no, it's only 6 years it's gone here. It started at like 150 and it's just slowly crept up. Just because reasons.
Oh.
That's funny.
So that is all for now from us. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, give us some feedback on our Facebook page. Follow the group and keep up to date with whenever we are sending out podcasts. We can also be found on the MTGCast network. That is mtgcast.com, as well as our own podcast website, which is glimmerofgenius.podbean.com. Also, if you're interested in even more Magic the Gathering content, then please check out my YouTube channel, Vincent Games, which you can find in the description below, or search up Vincent Games on YouTube. Once again, thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for more.
I'm gonna go make a mono blue Godfrey gift.
Take care, mate.
Bye.
Bye.